It is my great pleasure to bring into the Awful Announcing Podcast my good friend from Fox Sports, Rob Stone, who is not calling a soccer or basketball game for the next, 20 minutes, so we have a chance to talk. How are you? Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, we're good. I'm glad I could take my five-hour break and spend it with you.
Honestly, you're all over the place, and I want to get to the balance of doing soccer matches midweek, college basketball, all the other stuff that you do, some of the stuff that maybe you haven't gotten a chance to do at Fox. But first, as I like to do, you and I have known each other for years, and we've talked a million times, but I always like to try and get a little research. This is different. We're sort of an Inside the Actor studio for media people here. So I Googled you, and you are not the only...
Which is always dangerous, by the way, right?
Right. Well, and I'll make this joke, and people can do the Googling on their own. Better to get the results for your name than Josh Elliott's name, and I'll leave that there for everyone else. But you are not the only Rob Stone, and I didn't know this, but the guy who played Kevin on Mr. Belvedere... Do you have like a Rob Stone convention every once in a while? Or
No. Actually, that's not a bad way to spend a weekend in March in Vegas. No, I've never met the guy. I've gotten a few things. There's also a musician in the Chicago area, a blues musician, and like a few random authors who go by Robert Stone, which is my birth name. But yeah, the Mr. Belvedere guy. Is trippy because I used to watch Mr. Belvedere as a kid. I actually enjoyed that show.
Oh, so did I. Yeah, I mean, come on. It was one of those, you'd sing the theme songs, and I won't do it now, but one of those that always just sort of stuck in your head. But you mentioned the Rob Stone from the blues guy. The only reason I know about him is because he actually has robstone.com, which I'm sure sticks in your craw a little bit.
Well, I'm a little late to some of the parties out there, so like the Twitter game and the... all the domains. I missed the boat on all of those. So, which is fine because sometimes that pushes me away from spending more time doing that type of stuff and let me embrace what I already have on my plate.
There is one other guy, by the way. I don't know if you know about it. It took a couple of clicks. Actually, I'll be completely honest because I'll tease my next question. I Googled Rob Stone beard because there was, and I want to get to the whole idea of grooming and whatnot for TV because wasn't there one year where you showed up for, it was like you had a couple weeks off and then there was a soccer match and you had a beard and all of us on Twitter freaked out. We're like, Rob Stone has a beard. And so I Googled that to try and find out if it was you or if it was Alexi or one of the other people that you work with because I thought it was you. And there's a guy in Detroit who I'll say looks exactly like you, who does a TV show and who has a beard sometimes. It's weird.
saying the fact that I, quote, had a beard might be stretching the definition of beard. I think it's Rob showed up with dirt on his face. And, oh, by the way, it happened to be facial hair. Eric Winalda and I have a long running joke, and it's called the angry beard. And it just appears at some time during the year when you've been overworked and overstressed, and you're just kind of saying, screw it, I'm not shaving. And it just appears, and we'll look at each other, and he'll do it, or I'll do it, and then we'll go, oh, the angry beard is back. And we get a good little chuckle out of it because we're allowed to be surly for like 5 minutes off camera with an angry beard because it gives us such a hard edge. I mean, Dan, I was completely transformed with that beard. Although I will say that beard helped spark my fourth child.
Well, all right, I only have two, and I have had a beard for like 12 years or so. When my wife lived in California, where you are now, we had gotten engaged while she was there, and I said, I'm not cutting my hair or shaving until you get back. Because I figured, what do I have to live for? I mean, my girlfriend at the time, then fiance, is living across the country. This is the time. Live it up. Don't cut anything.
Wait, you said that or she said that?
I said that to her. I said, I'm not shaving or cutting my hair. And I eventually, after we got married, I cut my hair. My hair was rather long when we got married. But I have not shaved since. I have not been clean shaven in almost 15 years.
Be afraid of what you'll find when you finally take out that razor.
Yeah, I don't want to do it. Speaking of beards and speaking of Fox Sports, you mentioned the angry beard. I assume that's what Joe Buck is doing right now. I assume this is just like one big stick up to the Fox brass because he has – yours look better than his, Rob. Come on.
I'm not going there.
Well, all right, but it does lead – I thought of this question because I'm – crazy, but also because my kid's going to be on TV again today. I don't know if you saw the thing, but Max was in Iron Man last week. And so local TV wants to do, you know, when a kid's a celebrity, local TV wants to come and do a thing. So
sure.
So TV's come into the house. And last time they were here, when the kids raised all this money for hospital selling these calendars that we did, they asked me to be on too, which I didn't sort of anticipate. But when you have an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old, they're probably like, we should get an adult on here. And so I was ready for it, but I hadn't gotten a haircut. And then I thought to myself, you always, and most TV people, it's not just you, but you're always on TV and you're always impeccably groomed. And it made me think, because I got a haircut yesterday in case I'm on TV today, how often do you have to do that kind of stuff? Like, how often do you have, you can't have that, like, oh, I went 6 weeks instead of 4 weeks haircut, because, you know, for at least for me, you look ridiculous 2 weeks after you should have gotten it. So is that awful for you? I mean, it's part of the business that you're in, but is it just annoying?
It's not awful. My goodness, it's not awful.
You know what I mean, though, Ed? It's just annoying.
No, I think everybody has their own personal grooming habits. At least I hope they would. And my hair is one of those things that I don't care that much about until it hits a point. And then at that point, it is the number one priority in my life, and it has to be cut within the next 4 hours. And I'll go through my list of people who can help me get it done, and then it's done. It's done. So it's weird. I'll have some section of my hair will turn instead of a calmness to like a comma, and I go, that's it. That's my clue. I can't take it anymore. And I'll just start going down the pecking order, and I'll go bad. Like I'll go dark. I don't care who it is. It doesn't have to be a stylist. You just have to have a pair of scissors to make a straight edge, and you're in. You're in. And then I'll sort it out later. But it's the power of a good haircut, right? It's amazing. Sometimes at Fox for the soccer guys, we always have makeup people, right?
Right, right.
And most of the time there's hair people, and the hair people are basically just to make sure that the men can look proper on air. You know, there's no flyaways, and, oh, by the way, you know, what's going on here? And Now they've gotten to the point where they can start cleaning up some ear hair that floats into some of our some of the customers, and a couple of them cut hair, and it's funny when the people who cut hair come in, and we know they're the haircut people, we pounce. So Mr. Barton, Warren Barton, is very good at sliding into the chair early in the morning and just a little off the back and around the ears, tidying it up a little bit, hun, and bang, and you walk out of there like a proud dog strutting down the street after a little haircut and a grooming session. And it's amazing the superficial, trivial things that give people in our business a little extra hop in their step.
No, I remember I was on Beatles' show one time when she was on NBC, and I had a commute from South Jersey, drive a car, get on a train, walk like 30 blocks because I didn't trust the cabs, and I get there and it's a hot day and I'm like dripping in sweat and I'm thinking, man, my hair is going to look awful for TV. And I'm on with Chris Mannix, who was, you know, from Sports Illustrated and all that. And he comes in, he had just gotten off a plane, he was doing the NBA finals, and he looked ridiculous. And 5 minutes later, he looks like he's the president of the United States. The hair is perfect. And he looks at me and he goes, well, you didn't just let him do your hair for you? Or something like the look on his face was just like, well, this is your first time, isn't it? They do your hair for you here. And I thought, man, why didn't
If they're offering the service, Dan, you take them up on it. They are experts in their field. That is what they are paid to do.
Yeah.
And they want to do it. So, so I just sit down there and I go, although there are like are a few people who maybe overproduct you, and you know, so you're like, I want to go kind of dry today, or you purposely kind of bob and weave around them and just show up on the set and it's too late, or you'll have we have one person who is a serial hairsprayer, so it's like, you know, just killing the environment on my head of hair, and I'm like, just a little hit, just a little bit, please. We don't need too much. We are spending a lot of time talking about hair. We have better topics, right?
I don't know. I'm honestly looking at the questions I have for you.
So.
I'm not 100% sure. It's funny. Well, and this leads to this question, which is a little bit more of a serious question, but I'm asking you just because you're the person I'm talking to right now. Honestly, this has nothing to do with you, but I'm watching something. I think it was actually Fox not long ago, and my daughter, who's 8, looks at me and she says, Dad, how come everyone on TV is blonde? And my wife just like almost spit out her drink, and I thought,
That's good.
I said, I don't know the answer to that, but it's true. And then look, there are people who you work with who I'm friendly with. Julie Stewart Binks, I think, is one of the hardest working people in this industry. And yet I feel awful when I say to my daughter, I don't know, everyone, because it doesn't mean that they're not insanely qualified for their job or immensely talented. It's just there's a lot of blonde. You being one of them on the male side, there's a lot of blondes, especially at the place you work.
Yeah, well, more on the news division side, I think. And I don't know if that's a conscious decision. Like, I don't think that's in the handbook at Human Resources. But you're right. When you kind of look at it and start doing the math, you're like, there's an inordinate amount of this color of head of hair compared to the others. And, you know, in the end, I think the super high intelligent execs way above my pay grade realize that to get numbers and to have viewers, people would prefer to look at pretty people if given the option. You know, they certainly want the intelligence and the information that comes with it. But if you're saying if all things are even, why wouldn't you stop, your channel clicking at something that's good to look at?
And I think that's sort of the industry issue and the industry problem. I agree with you. And
absolutely.
I think some of the stigma of it is, well, what if all things aren't equal? And that's the question I don't feel like answering. I'm not asking you the question, but I think just to sort of throw it out there for people who are listening, that's the question. If all things are equal, I totally agree with you. And it seems just common sense. Something good to listen to, something good to, I mean, but sometimes things aren't equal. And again, that's why people make more money than either of us making those decisions, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I step away from that and I shake my head and I'm pleased that I'm employed and I just keep on going to hair and makeup.
Speaking of that in a different context, and this is the next question I had, and I did not mean it in this way because now I'm sweating a little bit asking you, do you ever get nervous? On TV, is there ever a topic or has there been an interview that you've done or maybe even just a guy scored a goal in a game that you never expected to even be on the field and now you have to pronounce his name to a live television audience as you're getting it in your ear? Has there ever been some time that you've just been almost sort of sweating on air?
I don't think sweating on air, but I have some amount of nerve every second I'm on television to a different degree. And that's part of what excels a lot of people and pushes them forward is that nervous drive, that nervous energy, that nervous spontaneity. Yeah, I think I first realized it back in the early 90s when my first job in the business, I was a production assistant at ESPN, and it was a 6-month program, and you know you got to weasel your way in just for the interview to get into a program where you're hired for 6 months and you basically either make the cut or you don't, and you're working miserable hours. But it turned into sports television grad school for me, and I grew up in Connecticut, so Bristol was just down the road for me. Sure. I lived at home. I was working, you know, the 6 p.m. to 3 a.m. shift. I was coming in and, you know, rolling prompter and answering phones and putting together research packets and editing highlights. And you would come in and you would run to the highlight supervisor desk to find out what highlight you were given. And if you had the Calgary Flames, Winnipeg Jets late game from the Campbell Conference, you knew you weren't doing so hot. But if you had the primetime Michael Jordan, Chicago Bulls taking on the Knicks, and that was the lead highlight on SportsCenter, you're pumping your chest a little bit, right, saying, all right, I'm in good standing. They trust me with this. So, as I progressed through my working relationship, I worked with a lot of the anchors, you know, the Dan Patricks and the Olbermans and the Chris Myers, the Tiricos, the Fowlers of the world. And a lot of them kind of knew what I really, really wanted to do. They knew I was using this as a learning thing, but if I had my druthers, I'd be doing what they're doing. And Fowler was one of those guys who knew it, and he was very young at the time too, and he gave me the opportunity. I remember running in highlights to him, and you know, I would have the tape and I'd have the shot sheet, and he'd say, you know, and literally we're talking like 5 minutes before they go on the air for the 2 a.m. sports center, and he'd say, all right, read the highlight to me. And he's like, no, read it to me, you know, don't just say first quarter, blah blah blah. So he made me do my highlight to him, present it to him. So that was part one with Fowler. And the other part was, I remember when I was working prompter back then, and this was in the old days where, you know, you're printing out the scripts and the paper has like 7 copies of it attached to it. So you're like tearing off the edges, and the pink copy goes to the director and the yellow to the producer and the white to the talent and the blue to the font operator. So you got all these papers that have to go to so many different people. None of it's electronic. It's all with hand and foot. And Fowler was the worst, yet the best, because he waited till the end. He was always the last one to get scripts in. And I'm the little punk kid sitting at this desk at 1:55 in the morning, and all these people are yelling at me, like, where are my scripts? And I'm like, Mr. Fowler is still working on them, da-da-da. And Chris purposefully saved these till late because he got his creative energy up, and it was accelerated, and it peaked because he knew he was under deadline, and he knew he had this pressure. It drove everybody else nuts and crazy, but that's where he thrived. That was his environment, and I find myself, and I think you just naturally gravitate towards it, and that's who I am too. It's hard for me. It was always hard for me growing up to write papers 2 weeks ahead of time. Right? You needed to do it just that night it was due at 8 a.m. And you came up with your best stuff, and you were creative, and you're under pressure, and you banged it out. And that's the same way with sports, and that helps generate, going back to your point, that nervousness, that energy, like, I got to get this in time, and now I got to be over here, and I got to do this. It kind of puts me in like a game mode, where here's my playbook, and I need to perform it and do these things. But there's always elements of nervousness. A lot of times the most nervous I've gotten lately, and it's very minor, but it's Champions League. And sometimes we tape our openings, and you always want to start strong. But sometimes, because elements aren't in or whatever, it's like, hey, we got to do it live. And it's like, oh, wow, I got to do this whole rip for a minute and a half live. And it's really got to sync up to everything. And, out of nowhere, the Zlatan Ibrahimovic shot has changed. And it's somebody else, and you're hearing it 3 seconds, and you're, ahead of time before it appears while you're talking. So that's my nervous energy. But I haven't had any moments where I'm like inhaling, exhaling, like, somebody get me a sandwich bag. We're in big trouble over here. I think the Women's World Cup was the last time where I felt kind of a heavy burden on my shoulders, because I knew how valuable that event was to our network, to our sport, to me personally. And I just knew how much time had been invested, how much money, the value it carried across so many levels. And kind of day one, it was like, oh boy, we got to nail it. We got to come off strong, because people are ready to critique the hell out of us and slam us. And they've written negative reviews and reports already, and we need to own it on day one, minute one. That was the last time I felt really heavy burden.
Look, and you and I have talked since then on my old show, and I've written things and certainly talked to you for those. And I was one of those people. I mean, I was certainly one of the people who said Fox needs to prove that they care about the World Cup. And you guys did. And I wrote this, and I've said it to anyone who will listen. I was, other than a few things here and there, a few little, the champagne thing in the celebration to me was a little bit off, but other things, everything was the most professional I think Fox Sports has ever been. And a credit to you, and I've said this to you before, but I'll say it on this because we're talking about industry stuff. But honestly, it was a credit to you hosting it. It was a credit to the people directing it and producing it. Everything was taken with a level of, this is not just serious for us, this is serious for the world. We thought you were going to use that as a stepping stone for Russia or just to get your feet wet. And it was from the first day, we're going to take this seriously. And I think, again, you sitting there for most of the time at the desk, I think you deserve a lot of that credit.
Well, I mean, there are so many other people that worked so much harder and longer and put so much more into it. But, as far as kind of the crowning achievement of what I've been able to accomplish so far, that's at the top of the list. I give a lot of credit to my old employer. I was fortunate enough to work essentially every World Cup since 98 with them in various roles and learn from what they did. And, we all make mistakes. ESPN made mistakes with their World Cup coverage. Not many, nothing big and glaring. But if you go back to 98 and compare to what they did in 2010, you're like, holy cow, this is a world apart. And the world has changed, and the soccer landscape in the U.S. has changed dramatically, where the expectations are through the roof. They expect Super Bowl-type production levels at all times. Right. And the amount of soccer that is on every network, but particularly ours, it's staggering. If you add up the programming hours on, let's say FS1 and FS2, it's not even close, Dan. not even close who the biggest provider is. It's soccer. I don't even know who's in second.
Absolutely.
Maybe mixed martial, you know.
UFC, you guys do a lot of UFC stuff there, yeah.
Maybe some auto type racing as well, but that's trucks and cars and everything. And it's amazing the thirst that's out there for soccer right now.
Well, you mentioned that, you know, how different it is from 98 until now. I found out 2 months ago, and I didn't know this, that the Men in Blazers actually invented American soccer this year. Have you heard that? Did you know?
I love those guys.
No, look, I know.
Them
and,
so much.
And I don't want to turn this into a thing. They have done an amazing job of making the sport that was always snooty accessible to people. I think far more credit than is perhaps deserved. You, as someone who played soccer in college, who has been on MLS sidelines, I remember, didn't you do one from like a roof of an MLS game one time that you were doing like a sideline report?
BMO at BMO in Toronto with Bitchy the Hawk.
So I mean,
I was up there. Yeah, All-Star game. I've seen it all, man.
It's bigger now than it was, but the stories that have come out over the last couple of weeks and months, their PR people, or if the two of them do it, better than anyone in the industry. I mean, there might be three people who have better marketing, and it's like Stephen A. Smith, Bomani Jones, and then Men in Blazers. I can't think of anyone else who has a better, you know, ability to get themselves. But it's just hilarious to see, like, no, we've been around for years. I mean, Rob, how long were you doing The American? And how long were we talking about, you know, Yes Network having Manchester United games because we couldn't get it anywhere else?
Right.
Soccer
right.
fans exist in this country and have for a very long time. It's just, as you mentioned, a lot more accessible now.
Yeah, it's all over the place. And look, what those two guys have done, they're insanely creative, talented, and just decent people. So I'm thrilled for their successes. I would like to think most of us in the soccer broadcasting world are, because we are, as I like to say, one big soccer dysfunctional family. You know, we are all in this together. You know, to some extent, we are all cheering for success of this sport in the United States, whether that's through Major League Soccer or the men's and women's national teams. You know, we do all kind of come together. I can't speak for, you know, the NFL and the NBA and MLB, if there's kind of rivalries between networks and this and that, and I'm sure there has to be. But in the soccer world, you know, look, we all want to do well, but I think in the end, we realize where we've been and where we are and where we can continue to grow. And so many of us in this industry have crossed paths. You
sure,
know, Kyle Martino and Taylor Twellman, if I'm not mistaken, the first games they ever called were with me. You know, and then I go way back with Ty Keogh and JP Della Camera. And, you know, Alexi Lawless, when he was on his sabbatical, he and I did TV together. You know, that's how our friendship blossomed. And, you know, the old coaches who are now, you know, like Thomas Rongan, you know, I was there when he was doing his draft for the Tampa Bay Mutiny, covering him for a local station and interviewing him. And, you know, now here he is coaching and, you know, back in the television world. I think we all have this sense of responsibility, and we're all friends. You know, there's nobody in the soccer industry world that I would run across where I would say, what an asshole that guy is, or her. I can't wait to get away from them. It's more times than not, it's met with a hug and a clink of the glass, and let's tell stories and hear how the family's doing. So it's kind of a different dynamic in the soccer world.
Which, by the way, and just to point out, you mentioned his name before, is sort of the tongue-in-cheek with Eric Winaldo, because and I have been as hard on him as, you know, for years. He was my favorite player growing up. And it's funny that you say that, because in the industry, everyone gets, I mean, I've been to a million games and you talk to everybody and they're so accessible. Hey, I'm doing a story. Can you talk? Alexi will give you 20 minutes just because he feels like it. He doesn't care. Come on, let's talk about the story. So it's sort of, I'll admit this, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but I will only say it to you. So hopefully everybody else turn off your sound. It's totally unfair what we do to Winaldo. It's almost become sport, and now I'm starting to feel a little bad about it because of what you just said, that it is like sort of one big happy family, and he's like the uncle we're all like, oh, Eric's here. All right, come on in.
But he's well, we always have that crazy uncle or aunt or something. I'm not saying Eric's that crazy one, but we always have that guy who's a little bit of an outlier. But, you know, when Eric's in those circles, you know, at least with most of us, he's fully embraced and fully engaged, and
right.
He's got wonderful takes, and he's, guess what, you know, he's entertaining. You may disagree, you may agree, but in the end, he is providing you with something, whether it's anger or respect or hate or appreciation or love, but he's giving you a take that doesn't suck. Sometimes his presentation can come off a little surly, a little dark, but I think it's now to the point like where people just expect it. So when he's warm and glowing, people forget that.
Right.
And then they'll go back to that 10% that was maybe like, oh, what are we doing here? And, you know, we got to be better and smarter. And it all comes from a good place. You know, he particularly on the American soccer side, you know, he wants to see success. He wants Americans to do well. He wants this league and national team to be better. You know, everybody I talk to lately, you know, the national team is a hot topic right now. Everybody just wants them to be better than they are, and stronger and more unified than where they are right now. So everybody's kind of going forward, I think, for a similar cause. But you're right. Eric is in an interesting situation. You know, just the perception of seeing him out there, it does trigger immediate responses, fair or unfair, from a majority of the soccer audience out there.
You mentioned everybody's sort of on board to get the U.S. better, and certainly you listen to a guy like Alexi Lalas or Winald, anybody who's on TV who has played for the U.S. national team, they have a stake in this. And from a media standpoint, we understand that. I've always long said that you shouldn't root for your favorite team in the press box. If I grew up a Phillies fan and I'm covering the Phillies, I'm not going to cheer in the press box. But it's different when it's your country. It's I've been to so many games. I mean, I saw, it was a friendly match, Brazil and the United States. Not RFK, what's the one? FedEx Field. And the Brazilian radio people are so loud, none of us in the press box who are writing can work. And everyone keeps like sort of glaring at them. I'm like, no, that's what we want. They care so much. We need to care that much. We should have a stake. And I know it. And look, I've been as hard on Jurgen Klinsmann as anybody, but it doesn't mean you can't be critical. It doesn't mean you can't be realistic with your expectations or what you write, but we're still rooting for the team. So the question is, how do you sort of handle that, especially going back to you doing the Women's World Cup? I mean, clearly you were all pulling for the United States, although you Fox did a great job of having a very diverse crew with you, so it wasn't all just go USA. But how do you balance that when you're on TV and it is the national team? Or do you just say, you know what, I'm an American, as you always say, this is who we are?
Yeah, it's a balance that I think has really evolved. Back when I started, you know, let's talk like World Cup 98 in France. It was borderline taboo to show any patriotism, any allegiance to your country. And I always thought that very odd, but I was, you know, very young at that time and impressionable, and I wanted to listen to my executives and do my job and not screw up with my Steve Sampson interview and things like that. But I remember sitting here saying, wait, why can't we be excited? You know, because you guys are excited for the U.S. games. You know, you realize how important the success of the national team is to our ratings and to the perspective and the conversation of how this World Cup went for our network and for our country and for our team. We need them to succeed.
Right.
And there's so few things out there in this day and age that you can actually be patriotic about. And that's what I love where this national team is, because I know there's other national teams, but it's not the same, right? You know, I mean, Olympics to me has lost some of its luster. Do we get as excited about Olympic, you know, the U.S. national hockey team anymore? You know, no, because it's just not there. But the national teams of men's and women's soccer have grown, and they've captured this red, white, and blue passion. And I go back to Jack Edwards a lot, the 2002 World Cup, and he had some of these just most iconic calls from Korea, Japan, and they were crazy patriotic. And they were exactly what I was thinking and saying. I still get goosebumps when I hear them, but he got beat up behind closed doors and in the press for being so pro-American. And I just couldn't understand it, because, wait, we're not supposed to be happy that Clint Mathis struck the stunning goal on the biggest stage?
Right.
I mean, of course we should. Now, I'm not saying get in the press room and we're running around and taking off our shirt and whipping it around our head and missing our deadline. But you can have a pump of the fist and a high five with your neighbor next door and then carry on. And I think we've seen this evolution of acceptance of patriotism here in the U.S. with the soccer coverage.
Rob, but I'll take it a step further, though, because when Landon Donovan scored the goal in, you know, to send the U.S. through two World Cups ago, I'm sitting at my desk because I'm live tweeting. I think I was working at the time for Sporting News. I think it was. And I started to cry. I started to shake. And I'm looking around my house saying, who is here that I can scream with right now? And I think at the time, I was home by myself. So you can't tell me that when Jurgen Klinsmann decides to leave Landon Donovan off the World Cup team of the most recent World Cup, that that's not going to eke in to my analysis or to my coverage. The importance of that goal, the importance of that man as a player in American soccer history, and the emotional connection I have to him because of those moments isn't going to flood into my work anyway. So why not just admit it? Why hide behind it and pretend like I'm going to type these words as an impartial observer? No, I'm an American, and that matters to me.
Yeah, we're kind of like the last frontier with that, and I think a lot of that comes with sweeping some executives out of control who grew up in that background where this was not accepted, the, you know, the quote-unquote no cheering in the press box. Because when you're covering a World Cup and you look around at every other journalist there, I mean, they are wrapped in the colors of their country. They are wearing flag. I mean, it is so biased. And guess what? If you're covering this for Chile, you're there to watch your country. You want to know what is going on with your country. You want to see them win. And of course, the broadcaster should have some of that emotion as well. I think Fox did a really, really good job of embracing our colors, embracing our country without flaunting it. And that was never a directive. There was never, to go back to that term, that the handbook that was handed out and said, guys, you can go to this point, but be careful. They always asked us just to be true. And I think we were true. You know, we were disappointed in how the U.S. started and we called it out. We were happy when they turned things around. We were thrilled that they won the World Cup without sitting there waving our flag and embracing it. To the extent that maybe some other nations would,
well,
had they just won a World Cup. Now let me tell you though, if the men win the World Cup, you know, in my lifetime, and I'm part of it, there will be tears. You know, and I don't care. Don't screw you. I'm crying on air. I'm hugging people. You know, if Alexi Lawless and I are still doing television together at the hip, I mean, that's going to be a crazy embrace. You know, and that's where this sport has come. And I don't care if I get scolded and sent back to the woodshed and you know, you're doing billiards for the rest of your life in television. That's fine, because that hug and that cry will be worth it.
Do you miss billiards? Do you miss bowling? That was my next question.
I do miss bowling. Yeah. Yeah. If bowling came calling, if I could work bowling into my schedule and it was allowed, I'd be back in a flash. It just brings back so many happy times. I just enjoyed it. It was, you know, it doesn't make any sense. You know, this love affair, you know, it's one of those, you know, she's from the Hollywood Hills and he's from the Valley and he's in the punk rock and she likes country. You know, how are these two getting together? But for some reason, bowling and I, you know, she's a mistress that'll never leave me.
That was the most California explanation that I've ever
like
heard.
That. Do you know why I said that? Because somebody said the term Valley Girl to me yesterday, and I started singing the song, She's a Valley Girl, and I'm like explaining the Zappas and explaining a young Nicolas Cage, and this girl who I thought would understand it had no clue. And I said, you saw the movie, right? And she's like, oh yeah, it was, oh, gosh, I wish I could remember. It wasn't like Heathers, but it was like one of those movies. And I'm like, no, Valley Girl. And she just looked at me, and I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, please go Wikipedia it, Google it. Just listen to the song Valley Girl. Find the movie. It was a good movie. So I have Valley Girl in my brain.
No, that's fine. There you go. I only have a couple more questions for you. One had to do with that. It wasn't specifically bowling, but it was if you miss anything that you used to do. I mean, a lot of times when you get to the level of being in the studio, you don't get the opportunity to do a lot of in-game stuff. You're on site. I mean, a lot of the basketball games, especially the tournaments, as you get into March, you're on site for a lot of those. Soccer, certainly, you're in the studio for most of it, but you know, when you do the World Cup or when you do a big event, you're going to be there on site. So it's not that you don't get to travel, but do you ever miss being on the show more? I mean, if you're doing a soccer match, it's 90 minutes of actual game, and it's what, you get 8 minutes maybe pregame, you get a little bit more postgame, you get 30 seconds. Do you miss sort of having the amount of time to really tell the story of a game and not just get scrunched in with highlights at halftime?
I think it's more of missing the smell and the feel, the taste, the atmosphere of being on site in those games. When you're banging out, 150 a year, you lose touch, and you need to sit back and reflect, like, just how special it is to be on the field of the Rose Bowl, working the Rose Bowl. it's an institution. There are millions of people in this country who would their mouths would just drop open, like, you're kidding me, you were on the field, you saw whoever play whoever,
right?
And when you're in this business, you just kind of take some things for granted. And my move to Fox was to get me off the road, was to get me away from these venues, get me closer to my family and do some other things professionally. But when I'm granted those limited opportunities to get out there, like the Big Ten championship game 2 weekends ago in Indy, like, all of us, because we had been basically held captive in the studio for a large part of the season, to get out there for a game that matters in an environment, Dave Wonsack could hardly hold his water. He was so excited to be back in his environment, back on the sideline, and hearing people and everybody yelling and calls and hearing pads pop. And I miss that. I absolutely miss that. But I love what I'm doing, and I love where I'm at. So it's nice to have just a little flavor. It's like if you've been – I'm a Cracker Barrel guy, right? I like Cracker Barrel. I get excited about Cracker Barrel. I enjoy my chicken and dumplings. I enjoy my sweet tea. It's comfort food. I'm kind of a comfort food guy, but every once in a while it's nice to go out and have a real nice meal where you're like, ooh, that was pretty good. I hope somebody can make that for me again in my life. But the next day I'm happy to go back to Cracker Barrel and get my, my biscuits with honey and my corn muffins. So that's kind of where it is work-wise for me. And a lot of it too is also, I just like variety. That's why I love the fact that Fox works me so hard, and they let me do soccer, and they let me do college basketball, and they let me do college football, because it's a new season for me, and it's new life. And it may wear me down at the very end, but now here's college basketball, and I'm rejuvenated and excited. And then in the new year, here comes the Champions League knockout stage. I'm rejuvenated. I'm excited. I'm ready to go. So I love the variety. That's what I need to succeed. And Fox, God bless him, has given it to me.
Okay, I have to admit, I wasn't listening to the last 2 minutes because I've just been envisioning you, Dave Wonsett, and Warren Barton at a Cracker Barrel. So if you
not a bad idea.
If you can just rewind, an amazing visual. But I totally get what you. The one event that you didn't work, which I was disappointed and wrote about this for Awful Announcing, was the U.S. Open, and I know it coincided with the Women's World Cup, and I found it interesting that they kept you. I mean, I know why they kept you up in Canada. You were doing the whole tournament. It would have been weird to sort of shoehorn you into the other coverage, but they needed your coverage, I think. I think, especially from an anchor standpoint, they could have used that. Was there any discussion about that, that you could have either tried to do both, or you weren't a part of that?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, it was, we had a lot of talented people there at the U.S. Open. And, again, it goes back to me, at least, to the value of soccer to Fox, and particularly the property that is the World Cup. Here it is. This is our crew. And if we're going to hijack some certain people from it to drop them into another product that basically tells the viewer, hold on a second, take a couple days off, because we don't value this as much as that at the moment. These people will be back, but they have a higher calling. They have a higher need right now. I don't think that was ever the case, ever discussed. Nobody ever brought it up to me. I know okay. that. And I wasn't knocking on any door saying, what the hell is going on here? Why am I not doing golf? I was part of the Women's World Cup. I was over the moon. I was thrilled.
More to the point, I guess, is that's not the only time they're going to have it. Is that something that maybe you haven't had a chance to do, that now that Fox has that property, that you'll be interested in getting involved in next year when there isn't a World Cup for you to cover? Or is that you sort of, I have college football, college basketball, and soccer. That's enough on my plate.
I got enough. I got enough. If they come to me and ask me that they would like me to do something, I always say yes. But I don't go knocking on doors and say, what in the world is going on? Do you realize who I am? Because people don't realize who I am. So that's why I don't do things like that.
I have two more questions for you. And I almost went full circle with the Mr. Belvedere thing, but it just didn't feel right. So we'll go through. Do you know who I am? I'm not that guy. 2016 is coming up. And it is going to be big for Fox as a company because of the presidential election. How happy are you that you have sports after the Fox that you work for, and you don't have to deal with the mess that is and will be the 2016 election?
The news and the sports world really don't intersect that often at Fox. I hear stories every once in a while about maybe a player turning down an interview because he sees those three letters and he associates that with what is perceived to be the slant of our news coverage. But I've never faced anything
Oh, I don't even mean
in
that.
my
No,
time
that's
at Fox.
interesting. I didn't even mean it as like a people look at Fox that way. I just mean in general of the coverage of like not. I mean, because I'm looking at this and we're trying to plan out sort of a general sports. Like we talk about Donald Trump more than we talk about Peyton Manning right now. So it's just sort of
Yeah, frightening.
a weird balance. But I'm hoping, and we're doing our of the year lists and who had the best year and this that. And one of the guys wrote back four things that were very, very hyper political because they're big stories. And it's hard because of the crossover with sports. You had Ferguson and some of the other sports things that come up, and obviously, or social things rather, that tie into sports. It's tough at a general sports to do that. I'm just wondering, with politics taking over everything, are you just sort of generally happy that you've never had to do that, or is that something that interests you
Yeah,
at some point?
politics are not my game. I mean, the closest I got to dealing with politics was when I was doing local news in Albany, Georgia, and there'd be a county commissioner runoff, and I might be shooting video somewhere and trying to get some numbers. I don't get into the political game. I mean, as the most excited I've been about politics lately is when Will Ferrell brought back George Bush on Saturday Night Live over the weekend. That's my political skew and coverage. That's what makes me happy. Will Ferrell involved with politics. Then I'm paying attention. Other than that, just bring me the sports. Give me the ball. Does the ball bounce? Do you throw it? Do you kick it? What is it? Let's cover it.
By the way, we're taping this on Monday, and as we're talking, breaking news that Major League Baseball decided not to lift the lifetime
Yeah,
ban
I
on
just
Pete
saw that.
Rose.
Pete Rose. Yeah. Yeah,
Speaking
that
of.
bums me out. That bums me out. What a gem he's been. What an absolute, gold mine of talent that Fox was able to unearth and bring him onto the baseball coverage. I love talents like that, and you almost need to get kind of those older crusty guys that just don't give a rat anymore. Like, I've done what I need to do. I don't need you, right? I don't need television. You do nothing for me, so I'm just going to do what I'm told, and I'm going to talk how I talk and give you my take, and that's what makes really good, exciting television. Pete Rose, as soon as I heard that hire, and the fact I came down into my dressing room, and we were sharing a dressing room one day, I was so giddy. I had to take a picture of it. I sent it to my dad because he was an old Cincinnati Reds fan. We love having Pete hang around too because during the baseball playoffs, it would coincide with our college football Saturdays. So all of us would be in the big room together watching football and baseball. Pete Rose and Frank Thomas and Coach Wonstadt and Matt Leinart and all these guys, just letting them tell stories and rip on each other. And it was very much kind of like a locker room type feel that you were able to get all the stuff out of the way and then clean up the act on television. But Pete Rose, he belongs in the Hall of Fame. Nobody cares my opinion, but he belongs there. But
Yeah.
he belongs in front of the TV camera as well.
Well, they all Bonds and I mean the Hall of Fame is a whole nother, we could do 10 hours on that. But instead, I'm now going to imagine a four top. You, Wonstadt, Warren Barton, and Pete Rose going to a Cracker Barrel.
At Cracker Barrel. I have done Cracker Barrel with my good friend Jay Williams. When Jay and I were doing college basketball together, the two of us, I'll never forget, I don't know why, but we stopped at a Cracker Barrel somewhere in Georgia, driving to Athens, and it was like one of those cold, gray, damp Georgia Tuesdays before like a Georgia Vanderbilt game. And we stopped, rolled into a Cracker Barrel, sat right in front of the fireplace and played checkers while our order was being taken. And I was like, this is good. This is good road life right now. I'm not sure Jay felt the same way, but he seemed to enjoy it, at the moment at least.
Thank you so much for doing this. I really, really appreciate it.
Anytime, anytime.